10 o'clock here on a Wednesday on 1490 WBCB and 107.3 FM. Matt Miro here with you. And once a month, we are blessed to have the opportunity to talk with Bucks County DA Jen Shore, brought to you by Dion Square Merchants, here on Justice for All. And we bring in the aforementioned Bucks County District Attorney Jen Shore this month. Jen, and District Attorney Shore, how are you?
Good. Matt, please always call me Jen.
Okay, that's fair enough. Well, we always appreciate you giving us some time here each month here on Justice for All, and we discuss and talk about local trends in criminal mischief and other things, as well as some cold cases that you and your team and teams that you were a part of over the years were able to uncover. We had some great conversations this summer, and we're going to continue, I know, this month today with another case that I know that you and you were a part of, and former DA Matt Weintraub was a part of, and it really the importance of these cases, Jen, I'm sure you can attest, is it brings so much clarity, closure to families that may be aching for years, if not decades, and to be able to do that, I know, is very important to you and everyone in your office.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Matt. You know, we've made it our mission, and I continue with that passion, that mission, to make sure that any unsolved case, every unsolved case, I should say, is pursued and never forgotten. And at this juncture, the oldest that we were able to successfully prosecute, the oldest homicide, was 1981, which was a domestic murder in Warrington. In 1984, rape and murder of a little girl in Bensalem that I handled with a phenomenal team, and the phenomenal team in the Warrington case doesn't happen without the team effort. And
yeah,
the case we're going to talk about today was maybe perhaps not as cold, but it was remarkable in that it was 16 years later, after a missing person, nobody suspected homicide, that we, not only were we able to provide closure, but perhaps I'm going right to the headline of the story, is that we were able to recover the victim's remains 16 years later after his murder.
Yeah, well, you kind of teed it up there. I'm going to just kind of bring it to the listeners' attention, and I'll let you kind of set the scene, and then we'll kind of go from there. So you aforementioned Damon Smoot was the individual who eventually pleads guilty, 16 some odd years later, the killing of, I hope I'm pronouncing his last name right, Adam Brunage. And I'll let you kind of go from there. It was, from my vantage point, like a disagreement in a quarry turned kind of deathly, and I'll you kind of teed up kind of better.
Yeah, so it the disagreement in the quarry was what we attributed, what the defendant tried to explain and mitigate what his real motive was. Adam Brundage was a young man. He was in his early 20s. He was a young father, and he and the mother of his children weren't together, but he very much loved his young children. He was a bit of a recluse, probably would have been identified or diagnosed today as being on the spectrum. You know, he was an avid coin and stamp collector, and really kept to himself, and was very small in stature. He was a growth issue as a small child, took some growth hormones, but he was very small in stature. He had lost his father, and tragically his father died at a young age due to an illness. And as a result, Adam inherited quite a bit of money. And Adam invested in owning a property, a home in Quakertown. He bought himself his dream car, nothing extravagant, but a car he was quite proud of. And, you know, he kind of was still trying to find his way professionally, working some odd jobs, but was able to get by due to his inheritance. Unfortunately, Adam met Damon Smoot through some mutual friends, and Damon Smoot, although articulate and presented like someone who was perhaps an upstanding citizen, really had a dark side. And initially, Adam allowed Damon Smoot to move into his residence because it was going to help offset the mortgage. And slowly but surely, Adam became a victim of Damon and ultimately disappeared. And Damon essentially just started taking over Adam's life. He claimed Adam left, and he gave varying accounts of where Adam went and why he left the area. And he said he gave him his home and gave him his car and you know, he couldn't explain where the pets, his Adam's beloved cats, were. But Damon Smoot just pretty much started just taking over Adam's life. Very strange set of circumstances. Unfortunately, when you have an adult who disappears, it's a different investigation than when you have a young child who disappears. And initially, you know, the police are limited in what they can do until they have something concrete to go on. Because sometimes people do disappear from their life. Sometimes people cut off ties with loved ones, very rarely, but it's a little bit different than naturally when a young child or a care-dependent person disappears, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think one of the biggest things about any of these cold cases, and I'll let you keep going, Jen, is and we've talked about this in the past, is there's so many moving pieces than a traditional, you know, active or current case, because you have to go back and deal with Quakertown police, state officials, sometimes other state officials. Some of those people are no longer in office. I mean, just talk about the moving pieces, and not just in the Damon Smoot case, just in general in cold cases.
Yeah, you're so right, Matt. You definitely need a team, and you need to, you know, and the team, you know, should be a force multiplier, because as you indicated, some people have either moved on, either retired, or even just been promoted out of the detective division, so are no longer able to primarily actively investigate an unsolved case. And you have to, especially when there's a no-body homicide, you're not certain where the individual was killed, you know, where you have a circumstantial case where this person did not, you know, voluntarily disappear. You have to, you know, map out all of their movements leading up to their disappearance, and you have to consider all possibilities. And in this particular case, you know, there were strong ties to South Carolina. There were ties to Montgomery County. There were investigative tools we used that brought us to other counties in the state. Given where Damon Smoot was when this investigation began, Damon Smoot was incarcerated for another matter, and so we had to work with, and it was just such a cool experience to work with state agencies, the Pennsylvania Office of Attorney General, other county agencies, the Montgomery County District Attorney's Office and their county detectives, law enforcement in South Carolina, the federal authorities. We were working directly with the FBI, even a profiler, and then working with my amazing team, a detective from Quakertown Borough, who was not the original detective. His boss was the original detective, who was promoted and second in command at the police department, but gave that detective the authority to run with the case. And that speaks to the common mission. Even if the original detective, who did great work, couldn't work the case himself, to give, you know, your blessing and allow resources to be allocated. And then, you know, my team, my amazing county detectives that were assigned to the case, and when I was assigned to the case, utilizing our grand jury, which has been a game changer in these unsolved cases. But I remember running a meeting at the as the investigation was really gearing up, kind of reaching a crescendo, and I'm looking at this table. There had to have been 30 people from various law enforcement agencies at the table, and all for this one common mission. It was a really cool feeling, and every single person played an important role, even if it seemed at the time a smaller role. Every person played an important role.
Well, and I have a soundbite from the press conference back in January of 2020 that kind of speaks light to that, and we'll get into that later. But if you just want to, you know, you mentioned how the case was started, what reopened it, we'll kind of go from there and then maybe take a break in about 5 minutes or so. Okay, so continue. I'm sorry.
No, absolutely. And let me know when you need to take a break or move on.
Yeah, absolutely. You got it.
So Adam goes missing. His stepmother, who very much was in his life still, knew that he would not have just disappeared. And his roommate starts to attribute it to, well, he had cancer and he just wanted to go away and not burden the family, like, because his father suffered from a serious illness and he just wanted to die quietly. And then the story changed to, well, he has a drug problem. He wanted to go to a rehab facility in the Midwest. And then he changed the story again, depending on who he was talking to. And so his stepmother was just absolutely vigilant in trying to get answers as to where her stepson was. She was planning on celebrating his birthday and making his favorite meal, And so she knew he would not have disappeared. Plus, she was a nurse, and she said Adam didn't take pain lightly, and he would call her with something relatively minor. So she found it completely incredible that he would have been diagnosed with a serious disease and not consulted with her. So she knew that this roommate was lying, and she was persistent, and the police did a great job documenting each and every statement and the lies that were originally told. And that became invaluable later in this prosecution. What we knew about Damon Smoot in 2004 was that he was he had a troubled past that started when he was a teenager living in South Carolina. His father lived up in this area. His mom lived in South Carolina. So he had ties to both communities, and he had a lot of police contact in both jurisdictions. We also knew that he was a sexual deviant with young girls, that he had been involved and convicted of sexually molesting younger girls and had served time in prison. Of course, you know, we believe that Adam was unaware of all of this. Damon presented quite like a normal law-abiding citizen. He was very smart. Anyway, ultimately, once there were facts that were being developed that could not be explained rationally, the police did a very thorough investigation and started to hone in on Smoot and his lies. And ultimately, and not to mention, as you know, that Adam inherited quite a bit of money. Now, he had spent quite a bit of the money he inherited, but had a recent additional settlement, you know, maybe just a little bit more than $10,000, and that money was unaccounted for. And most importantly, everyone knew he would not have left without his cat, and there was no explanation the roommate could provide as far as, you know, the cat, because all of the cat's belongings were in the home. So to make a longer story quite short, the police investigated quite thoroughly in 2004, but because and interrogated Smoot and others that knew Smoot and really built a strong case, but because Adam's remains were never found and they were stuck with, you know, some insurmountable roadblocks, the case did go cold. And in the interim, I was running our investigating grand jury, which is just a remarkable resource for prosecutors. It meets in secret. Random citizens are selected, and they serve for up to 2 years. They serve for at least a year and a half, up to 2 years, one day a week, hearing cases, unsolved cases. And we had tremendous success with some investigative tactics and tools using some modern, you know, resources and the grand jury on other unsolved cases. So the original county detectives approached me along with the newly assigned Quakertown Borough Police Detective, and we strategized to put the case in the investigative grand jury. And oftentimes what we have found in these cases are people who were reluctant to talk at the time that a murder or a disappearance like this occurred because they fear the perpetrator or because they're in a circumstance, you know, whether they're young, whether they're drug dependent, you know, and they've become clean and sober. Suddenly, sometimes time, although it can hurt us in these cases, can be our friend. And we can really, you know, shake some new information loose. And we started to make tremendous headway with known associates of Damon Smoot who were reluctant, but we're very effective at what we were doing. And also there's some other things that we do outside of the grand jury, kind of to surveil or gather information surreptitiously. And we were able to get a pretty clear picture that this was, in fact, a homicide. Now, the question still remained, you know, where is Adam's remains? And right. Ultimately, was he killed here in Bucks County? Was he killed at a family member's very rural, large property just over the county border in Montgomery County, up near Green Lane? Or was he killed in South Carolina? Because we were able to map out the movements of Damon Smoot around the time that Adam went missing. And those movements proved to be, you know, just a great source of information that we were able to just kind of unearth, if you will, the information I'll speak to first.
Well, so I want to take a break there and come back, because you mentioned some of the elements of this that is going to, you know, inform, you know, listeners is... Damon Smoot, you mentioned we're trying to, you know, locate not just the remains, but, you know, where he was that evening. When we come back, I want to talk about something that is hard to get probably in any cold case, which is an agreeance of the murder. You know, it's something that I guess probably doesn't happen that often, you know, a guilty plea, so to speak. So we're going to step aside, take a short break, and come back with more. You're listening to Justice for All here with Bucks County DA Jen Shorn. We'll be right back.
That's not just a bird. That's the sound of common sense coming back to Bucks County. The Bucks County Independence is your new home for local news. School board meetings, township budgets, election coverage, without the noise, spin, or outrage. If you miss the days when news respected your time and your intelligence, welcome home. The Bucks County Independence. Common sense, uncommon news. Visit BucksINDE.com to give us a try. That's BucksINDE.com.
Joey from Vermont, a farmer trying to get through the winter. Adriana from South Carolina, a single mother living paycheck to paycheck. Liam from Ohio, an injured father struggling to provide for his family. Hi, I'm Shanola Hampton, and I support the Feeding America Network of Food Banks because they help provide over 6 billion meals to people in need each year. Learn more at feedingamerica.org.
Hey, BCWSA customers, this is Tommy Green from the 1993 nationally champion Phillies. My friends at BCWSA are committed to providing us with safe, reliable water and sewer services. They operate state-of-the-art treatment facilities, provide clean drinking water, and make much-needed investments to protect our environment and ensure a sustainable future. Learn how BCWSA's investments help grow and serve our communities. Visit bcwsa.net. BCWSA, proven.
You won't see termites crawling across your floor, but thousands might be devouring the wood in your walls, weakening the structure of your home. For over 50 years, Termite Proofing and Pest Control of the Delaware Valley has been in the exterminating business. If you think you have a pest problem, they're the experts. Call them today at 215-639-5455. That's 215-639-5455 for TPPC. Termite Proofing and Pest Control of the Delaware Valley gives your home or business peace of mind, knowing your pest problem is in their hands. Located at 1560 Bristol Pike in Bensalem, they use only EPA-approved material applied by licensed technicians. Call Termite Proofing and Pest Control of the Delaware Valley at 215-639-5455.
Join us weekday mornings at 11 for Album Size. Gonna spin some of the best albums of all time. It's Album Size with yours truly, the philosopher Chris Ermer. Weekday mornings at 11 right here on 107.3 FM and 1490 WBCB. You can also listen live at WBCB1490.com.
All right, listen up, team! Big game tonight, launch of the Fedari News Network. Now every one of you's got a role to play, and I expect nothing short of perfection.
Sir, yes, sir!
Brawn and liberty, you fight for civic life like it's sudden death overtime. Investigations, truth-telling, defending the Republic, you've got heart. Politics PA, you're the seasoned vet. Since 2001, the go-to for political news. And now with that podcast... rock solid. That's why you're in the starting lineup. WBCB, you're my favorite. Bucks County's backbone. High school sports. Radio, podcast, video. Now Philly Pro coverage with On Patterson. You're the engine of this team. Access Networks, you wild animal. Breaking news in minutes. Suburbs to the shore. No huddle, no delay. My pass rusher. Alone, you're strong. Together, you're a force. Sports, culture, politics, breaking news. You're restoring the public square. You're earning trust. That's why this team's called Fedari. To trust, to be faithful. This isn't just news. It's a covenant with the community. And tonight, we play for all of them! Visit www.fidairynews.com.
Welcome back here, Justice for All, presented by Dion Square Merchants. Matt Miro here with you, along with Bucks County DA Jen Shorn, as we're talking about cold cases that have affected the Bucks County area. We'll get in later about some criminal stats, some things to look out for this fall, and some current cases here as well. I bring back in Bucks County DA Jen Shorn. And Jen, as we left off, we were talking about the Damon Smoot murder of Adam Brunridge, and we're at the point now where some individuals, as you mentioned, maybe are talking more than they were nearly two decades ago, and we're at the point now where maybe we have to bring back in the individual and see where it goes from there.
Yeah, so one of the things that we knew from the investigation, both in 2004 and then the investigation that was underway in 2019, was the fact that Damon Smoot takes this impromptu trip to South Carolina, to Myrtle Beach, which is where his mother resided. But he doesn't connect with his family. He kind of shows up and meets a bunch of friends, people he used to work with. He's acting strange. He makes some statements that are very strange to individuals in South Carolina. But one of the things he claimed to law enforcement up here was that he and Adam took this impromptu trip together, and that then upon their return, that's when Adam disappeared because he was depressed. He was suicidal. He had cancer. He had a drug issue. All of these various explanations. So we really started focusing in on these witnesses in South Carolina, and we learned quite a bit of, shocking information that wasn't known in 2004. But in addition to that, perhaps even more compelling is that we know that Damon Smoot was in and out of prison prior to Adam's murder, and when he was out of prison and on state parole, he met a young girl where he was residing in Green Lane with his grandparents' property in Green Lane. And this girl was a high school senior, and they started dating. And he claimed he was only in prison before because of a drug problem or drug issue. She had no idea that he had very bad violent tendencies and that he was also really a sexual deviant. And they started dating seriously, and slowly but surely he started to violently abuse and assault her. And she couldn't break off the relationship. And this predates postdates Adam's murder, but predates the solving of Adam's murder. This young woman was battered so badly by her boyfriend, but she felt she couldn't leave because he would threaten. She had a much younger sibling, and her parents, her dad and stepmom, lived nearby where he resided, where Smoot resided, and he would threaten to kill her family, especially her younger toddler-age sibling, if she told anyone. So he battered this woman and battered her and battered her, and it wasn't until she graduated from high school and got into college, she was going away to art school, that she had the courage to break up with him. And we know that on this particular day, she broke up with him. She had a job interview up in Quakertown, up in King of Prussia for the summer. And this story breaks my heart because she was dressed in a suit and high heels, driving her dad's pickup truck, secured a job interview and got the job offer for the summer, was driving home, and she made the mistake of answering a call from Damon Smoot. And she said, "I don't want to meet with you. I need time. I will meet with you at another point in time when things cool off." And he said, "Well, where are you?" And she goes, "I'm coming back home. I just had a job interview. I don't want to talk today. I'm coming back to my dad's home." And where her father lived and where Smoot's grandparents lived is in a very rural area in Green Lane with windy, windy roads with literally, on some of the roads, cliffs are on the other side. It's a very rocky kind of rural region of Montgomery County. Well, he hid his vehicle on a one lane, on the other side of a one lane bridge, kind of off to the shoulder in kind of a wooded area, waiting for her. And you have to slow down and yield to other traffic. So as she's slowing down to come on this bridge, he approaches her driver's side of the vehicle, punches her in the face several times. It's the summer. Her windows are open, beats her so badly he knocks teeth out. He pushes her to the side of the bench seat of the truck and saying, "You're dying today, you're dying today." and starts just driving like a madman in her truck with her as his hostage. And he says, I've taken your cat, and she loved her cat, another, you know, individual who loved her pets. It's in the trunk of my car. I'm going to kill your cat, and then I'm going to kill you, and then I'm going to kill your family. And he battered and beat this young woman so badly, and he pulls into an area of Green Lane. There's like an access road to kind of just an open little small field. And he says, this is where you're going to die. And it just so happened that there were young boys playing hooky from school that day, drinking in the woods. And they see this, and they call the police. And there was a tremendous police response. The state police surround the area. And he's literally marching this victim into the woods, saying she's going to die. But he realizes he's surrounded now. So ultimately, he lets her go and tries to escape himself. She comes out. I mean, the pictures, Matt, are, you can't even fathom this 18-year-old child. I mean, literally, just turned 18. I don't even know if she turned 18. She was 17 when they were dating. She just graduated. Black and blue, missing teeth, beautiful, smart young woman. And thankfully, you know, she literally runs into the arms of a state trooper. And they apprehend him, and he gets convicted of that crime. And he's incarcerated at the time we're starting our investigation for having battered her a couple years earlier. Kidnapping, robbery of a motor vehicle, all of the felony one offenses. Well, this young woman literally picks up and moves across the country and changes her name. That's how scared she is of Damon Smoot. And we realize that's a resource. She's someone we need to speak to. You know, they were intimate, they were close, you know, in an intimate relationship, and it would have been after he got away with, we believed, having murdered Adam Brundage. And so we track her down, and despite her fear and changing her name and literally severing all ties with anyone who could reveal where she was living, she fully cooperated, and she acknowledged that during the height of the abuse, he admitted what he did to Adam Brundage, but she was too terrified to share what had occurred because she was in such a bad place, and that she had lived with this, and he kept saying, I'll tell you more when we're married, spousal privilege, and everything she knew when you matched up against the facts of our case, we knew was credible. That this was not just some scorned ex trying to implicate her, you know, ex-boyfriend in a crime. That this was a terrified young woman who literally moved across the country to get away from this dangerous individual. And that coupled with getting unbelievable statements and evidence from South Carolina, which proved Adam was never with him in South Carolina, that he fled to South Carolina after he would have murdered Adam, and that there were some strange behavior, and he took Adam's car, and there were things we were able to link up. But the shortest version is ultimately all of these pieces of the puzzle were in place, and we had a very clear picture of what happened. And it culminated in confronting Damon Smoot himself in grand jury. And so that's one of the things we're quite proud of. Well, you know, we will pursue you with every resource available. And ultimately, it resulted in a full confession.
Wow.
Once he knew we were going to be dragging in everyone who he thought he had, you know, trust in, that they would
remain silent. Yeah.
And we listed everyone, all of his people from South Carolina. We listed, you know, this strong young woman who took such a courageous step in allowing us to use her as a part of this investigation, knowing how vulnerable she would be. And we laid it all out. He fully confessed. Now, it was through, you know, leverage, and everyone has a right to an attorney in grand jury, even a witness, not just the target. So there was a condition that he would produce information to reveal where Adam was buried, and the condition would be that he would have a lesser degree of homicide, third degree, which, quite frankly, for a man like that, with the sentence he was serving and all of his back time, we knew would be a penalty that would assure the community safety for decades to come, and probably the equivalent of a life sentence for him.
Yeah.
But the counterbalance was that we would get Adam's remains. And here, you know, as suspected as one of the three locations that it was, you know, the theory was that Adam could have been buried, he was buried in a quarry where Damon Smoot worked for a period of time. this massive, this quarry in Hilltown is massive. And it was such a, it's literally a working little city contained within this quarry, multiple tiers, an asphalt plant, giant dump trucks working on different levels in the quarry. And Damon Smoot had worked there. And I could not have been more grateful that H&K Quarry was so cooperative. We had to shut down their operations. And we, probably one of the coolest things in this story, you know, this unimaginable tragedy, is we brought out the team from the FBI that we got to work with on the Solbury farm, who helped to recover the boys, the four boys' bodies in the Solbury quadruple homicide. And that team of FBI evidence recovery experts are just remarkable. The coolest men and women who just do this all over the country, but not only the country, in parts of the world, if there's U.S. territories or embassies. And here they come out, and they have to surveil the quarry, and we bring Damon Smoot out in handcuffs and a jumpsuit to point to where in this vast quarry he recalls having killed and buried Adam. And, you know, you can't even imagine the scope. You might have seen the picture from the press conference. That doesn't even do it justice. That's just the first tier of the multi-tiered quarry. It goes three tiers below that. And there's live wires feeding the electricity to the quarry. And so we got this amazing team out. And it's bitter, bitter cold. And we get the confession on a Thursday in grand jury. We now are planning the week from that Thursday to the subsequent Thursday. The grand jurors don't even know we got a full confession, because it happened at the conclusion of grand jury that we got this full confession. And so I'm in grand jury the following Thursday, updating the grand jurors that following the session we secured a full confession. He came out and pointed where Adam's remains were buried, and now we are literally, operations are unfolding today to unearth Adam's remains with this remarkable team. Here I am deluding myself, thinking, oh, you know, I want to be there when they recover Adam's remains, and I'm still in court. It's going to happen, you know, the hour they start the operation. And, you know, by the time I get there and see this vast operation to unearth Adam's remains, it's literally, they go layer by layer by layer, inch by inch, you know, unearthing any evidence, and it's systematic, but it takes hours. And it's feeling pretty daunting, because now we're hours in and we see no sign of a human body. And, you know, we're about to call it off because it's dark, it's cold, the team has been out there for hours, and everybody's up on this mound, because where Adam was initially buried was maybe 4 feet in material that was pushed up with a backhoe. But now that 4 feet, because it's a working quarry, the material is now over 20 feet tall. That would be, you know, the mound underneath where Adam is buried. So they're unearthing this layer by layer. We're about to give up hope, and we see some of our colleagues at the top of the mound, give the universal sign for stop. And we see a shoe. And we all, you know, detectives and I are huddled up kind of like, you know, just, I'm saying a prayer that we're going to get his remains recovered. And then we're like, a shoe or a foot? And then they say, we see a foot in the shoe. And then lo and behold, they were able to recover Adam's remains. And he was almost, it was almost like a fossil impression, because there was hot asphalt poured over his body. And then that was pushed up against this area of the quarry where then material was just, you know, the quarry kind of stones and soil and all of the things that, you know, you would see in a quarry when you have a digging operation, was just pushed on top. And there he remained for 16 years until we got this confession.
Wow.
And, yeah, one of the things that I have to give credit, this amazing team from the FBI, who I mentioned travel all over the country but the world to do just this, they thanked us. They said, you have no idea how rare this is to recover human remains that many years later, 16 years later,
yeah,
on a homicide. They said, you know, this is so rare. And this team is the team, as mentioned, did the Solbury farm, but they also did the U.S. Embassy in Benghazi. They did, and one of the things that the Mike Byrne from the FBI evidence recovery team, just a remarkable guy, said to me something like, I remember before we even started the operation, wow, it's really cold. Your team must be just, you know, this must be tough. And he kind of said something like, well, you think this is cold? You can't imagine cold unless you imagine. And whatever he said made me realize, I said, are you referring to Sully's Miracle on the Hudson? The, you know, landing on the Hudson? And he said, yes, I am. I said, you did the evidence recovery?
Wow.
And he said, yes, we did. And here he's thanking us for his team getting this experience because of, you know, the work we did that allowed for, you know, the recovery of human remains more than a decade and a half later. It was just so cool to see the collaboration and to know that Adam, his remains were going to be returned to his family so he could be buried with his father.
And that's something I wanted to touch on. You know, there was a press conference obviously held once, you know, back in January of 2020 when this, you know, is going to be released to the media, and current Bucks County DA Matt Weintraub is there. You're there as well, as along with your peers and colleagues. Part of this, I can tell, it was an emotional day for you and others here. And current DA Bucks County Matt Weintraub had a really good soundbite. I'm going to play it for everyone to hear and kind of get your reaction on it. Here it is.
This is gives me a chance to reiterate once again that this is another cold case murder solved by Bucks County District Attorney's Office and many in law enforcement and other agencies. This has been an incredibly collaborative effort. Another family has now been given answers about their loved one, and their long-lost loved one can be returned home. Another killer has been brought to justice. I was explaining in awe, myself in awe, the other day to one of my colleagues about how we were able to revive this investigation and bring it to a just conclusion, and that we had solved another cold case murder. And he commented to me, and I'll leave out the expletives, he said, if you murder somebody in Bucks County, don't sleep, because we will get you. And I fervently believe that.
Just a great quote there, I thought.
That's a great quote. I had the chills here and again.
Yeah, it's just it's important for individuals and families, as you mentioned now, who can heal and know that you know, your current team and past ones have done a great job of, you know, trying to unearth these unthinkable crimes.
Yeah, and you know, we do it without even oftentimes letting the family know, because we don't want to provide false hope, and we're convening in secret. So we tell the family members that need to know, but we don't want to provide that false hope. So to be able to reach out to a family and say, not only have we been investigating your loved one's case, but arrests are imminent, or in this case, an arrest is imminent, and we will prosecute. I mean, it's bar none the best part of the job, and it has been so personally fulfilling, and it is not done for, you know, although obviously the news media, we are so grateful because they're such a tremendous resource to us, and oftentimes we generate tips. It's not done to see ourselves on the news. It's not done to, you know, share war stories. It is literally done because we try to walk in their shoes and imagine what they're going through, not only suffering this loss, but then having no answers, and that's unacceptable. We will not stop. And so I do. I have that quote written down, and I'm so glad you played that, Matt.
Yeah.
That's exactly.
That really
don't
was.
Sleep.
No,
don't sleep.
It's a great work, and it's a great cold case solved by the Bucks County DA's office, yourself as well. We're going to step aside, take our last break, and come back and talk about a current case and some crime stats and some trends, along with some other things here. You're listening to Justice for All with Bucks County DA Jen Shorn right here on 1490 WBCB. We're going to step aside, take a short break, and come right back.
Head out to Dion Square, located at South Oxford Valley and South Olds Boulevard, to get all your essentials in one place, with the following businesses ready to serve you. Pat Dion Beverages, CVS Pharmacy, Hair Cuttery, Smile Culture Dental, Biomat, Liberty Auto Tags, Pennsylvania Fine Wine and Spirits, Lee's Hoagie House, R&J Smoothies and Juices, AutoZone, and First National Bank and Trust of Newtown. Make Dion Square your one stop for all your shopping needs at South Oxford Valley Road and South Olds Boulevard in Fairless Hills.
Rob's Automotive and Collision Center in Lower Bucks County is a full-service repair center with competitive prices, top-of-the-line products, and the finest auto body and mechanical repair technicians anywhere. Rob's makes repairing your car easy. Same-day service guaranteed. Whether it's an oil change, state inspection, or a mechanical issue, Rob's will have you in and out and on your way. 2700 Veterans Highway in Bristol, 215-826-9200. For 24-hour emergency towing, call 215-826-0250.
Energy costs are skyrocketing. Now is the time to upgrade your old heater and air conditioning systems to more efficient units to save on your utility bills. Harris Comfort can also handle all your propane needs, as well as providing sales and service on whole house generators. Harris Comfort is still family-owned and has been serving our area for over 60 years, providing sales, service, installation, and peace of mind. Call 215-788-4596 or go to harriscomfort.com. Harris Comfort, still family and still local.
Welcome back in. Justice for All here on 1490 WBCB, 107.3 FM as well. Once a month, we meet with the Bucks County DA's office and Bucks County District Attorney Jen Shorn here, presented by Dion Square Merchants. And we just closed a cold case that we should discuss. In the last 10 minutes or so, we'll take the time and kind of inform listeners, Jen, about a variety of things, you know, currently going on. You know, I don't know, Jen, if there's a seasonality, to crime or stats or trends you see, but, you know, we're just getting, summer's kind of over, fall's here. Do you notice sometimes that there is trends in a seasonality, you know, kind of fashion?
Absolutely. We had talked previously, Matt, about, you know, there were probably a solid 2 years where every crime meeting you were hearing that catalytic converters were being stolen from people's driveways. I mean, parking lots where their condos or apartments were, but literally right in, you know, individuals' driveways. And some people at the gym in a parking lot, thieves would come in and cut out their catalytic converter, rendering their car useless. And there was such a clear criminal enterprise in that it was not just the thieves stealing catalytic converters, but clearly the precious metals that are contained within were desirable by individuals who knew they were dealing with stolen goods, and they were blatantly and openly operating businesses where they were giving money for precious metals when they knew that this just someone pulling a truck in with five catalytic converters didn't just take five of their
right.
vehicles, catalytic
yeah.
converters, and it was just so brazen. And so we had an idea, and again, using our grand jury, I attended these crime meetings, and I was seeing it was such a drain on every single resource in this county. And I was like, we need to pull these resources, and we need to establish this criminal enterprise. You know, it's not just the thieves. Of course, we have to go after the thieves, but they only can survive if there's someone dealing in stolen goods. So the amazing team was assembled. In fact, one of my colleagues was just recognized with an award this week. But an amazing team of detectives and prosecutors assigned to put this matter into the grand jury. And we ultimately identified this huge operation, TDI, out of Philadelphia, that was largely responsible for driving the crime spree in Bucks and the Collar counties. And it was so cool because after months and months of this investigation and going literally to the top and cutting off the head of the snake, we saw dramatic drops in numbers of catalytic converter thefts that ensued the following months, to the extent that our busiest department, Ben Salem, saw four the next month, then zero, zero, zero the following 4 months or 3 months, 4 months after. And I was so proud of that because that's how you fight these crime trends. You go at them head on, and next thing you know, you are a county, you're a place that they do not want to operate. They
yep.
don't want to do criminal, engage in criminal activity in your jurisdiction. And it was great collaboration. But now I'm sure you know and see the frauds and scams. I mean, they are every day. I get them on my phone. I've fallen prey to minor ones on, you know, a social media site, a deal too good to be true. So you can imagine we're all in this digital age of click, click, click. You're buying something and you trust it's legitimate, or you get a text saying your package we attempted to deliver is not here. Please input your information so we can re-deliver this valuable package. I can't recall what I ordered because I order so much online, or who may be shipping something to me because it's so frequent now. So people input their information, and next thing you know, they're victims of fraud. And we're seeing targeting seniors is just the most despicable trend right now, you know, using technology like AI to have the seniors convinced that it's a family member, a grandchild, a loved one, and they use a voice that is, in fact, sounds identical to their loved one's voice.
Yeah.
And they're generating these frauds with such sophistication that people, really smart people, and sometimes feel ashamed to report it because they feel that they, you know, look like a fool. But no, they're targeting so many people, and really smart people who, like I said, that's why I always share that I've fallen prey. I'm a career prosecutor. My husband's in law enforcement, and I've fallen prey to some of those, oh, you forgot a package, you know, or you didn't get a package delivered, please put in your information, you know, because we just, you know, sadly are, you know, it's
a society issue. You're right. It's not a human being anymore. It's a society element to it. Like you said, individuals such as yourself, older, younger, I think they're getting better and better each year of preying and lying to the consumer. I think you're exactly right. I know a big part of that, and that's the frustrating part, because I've had people get those scammer calls or think it is. It is important you do report them, even if in this instance it doesn't get solved. I know your office and police offices in general across Bucks County want to keep stats and things in their files to know where it's coming from, what area. You mentioned the catalytic converter stat. And those are important things, I know, to document, just not in your office, but in the police offices as well.
You're right, Matt. We are a force multiplier when, you know, we're a commonwealth, so every municipality or they'll have a regional police department, but they have their own police department, and they're phenomenal. That is, you know, not to suggest otherwise, but we need to share that information, and I get to witness. It's so great to see our crime investigators across Bucks, and we do it in partnership with our border Montgomery County towns, and Philadelphia police attend the Bucks County crime meeting. And they share information, and that's where we really see the trends as they're unfolding, and we can prepare the awareness campaign. As a prosecutor, it's not just our job to prosecute cases. The hope is we prevent them, and prevention is just as important, if not more important, and, you know, work together with our law enforcement partners. But the information sharing, you're so right.
Yeah.
And once we do, and to encourage people to report it, there is no stigma, no shame. Actually, the largest population of individuals who fall prey to the scams are not seniors. It's actually young adults, late teens and young adults, because they're used to the digital age of click, click, click. Everything, they trust everything, and as, you know, you should be a trusting individual, but, you know, you should be guarded too. But so I try to always reassure, you know, our seniors that, look, it's not just you, you know, young people are falling prey to this all the time too, but it's important we know about it. Even if they're overseas perpetrators, we will work with our federal counterparts if our jurisdictional limits, you know, we face a wall because they're overseas, but that information is key. You said it best.
No, you're right. And take a sharp turn from there. It's something, it's current, and we'll kind of wrap up with this. You have about 5 minutes left. I know how important it's been in your office and across Bucks County to aggressively prosecute, you know, crimes against children. And we had one there in our roundup today with our news director here about Michael Abel from Northampton Township. That was charged with DV sexual intercourse, corruption of minors, a variety of things on a girl that he adopted from China. I just want to commend you and your office, and if you want to, you know, kind of expand on that now that it's, you know, come out, you know, in the media and the press.
I do. First of all, I want to commend Detective Ryan Jumper from Northampton Township, who did phenomenal work on this case with my colleagues, a team of prosecutors, one who's out on maternity leave, who started the case, Sarah Salvo, and then David O'Byrne, who finished the case, and that's what we do best. We're a team here. They did phenomenal work, but most importantly, this child and her loved one who she confided in when she said this was happening to me. I can't even imagine her suffering and what this did to her. I mean, she was six when she came over to this country, adopted, and only to then 2 years later suffer abuse at the hands of her father, sexual abuse, and using the family and using love to try to groom and justify his actions. And it's just nauseating to see. But as you know, this is my passion, to make sure our children are safe. We see this with too much frequency. And I just want to commend the programs that are out there, too, to generationally. I mean, we did not the programs did not exist in the schools and in communities to make children aware that they can trust someone, they can come forward, that this is not a dirty secret that they're party to. And that's often what we see with these grooming tactics, and that's exactly what this dad did. We're doing this together. This is us doing this together, making it seem like they're complicit instead of really, you know, the victim knowing that they're a victim. So just so many people did great work in this, but praising the victim first and foremost and the loved one that she confided in who did the right thing, notified police. Outstanding work by the police department and then our Child Advocacy Center, where our multidisciplinary team comes together to interview a child in a non-leading, non-suggestive way so it meets all the evidentiary standards, but also the child doesn't leave there feeling re-traumatized. So I just can't be more proud of the work they did. And my hope is that he serves every day of the 30 years that his maximum sentence is, so that our community can remain safe from a predator like that.
Well said. Well, Bucks County DA Jen Shoren, we always thank you so much for your time, for the services you provide our community, for the cold cases that you bring up to the consumer and the listeners. And we can't thank enough once a month for letting us bug you and your team up there in Doylestown.
It's my pleasure, Matt. Thank you for everything you do.
That's Justice for All here on 1490 WBCB and 107.3 FM. Once a month, we meet with Bucks County DA Jen Shoren and talk about cold cases and local trends here affecting you, the Bucks County resident. We'll take a break. We'll go to the top of the hour news, and we'll see you next month here on Justice for All.